The legislature gathers back at the state capitol next week. The spring session was dominated by the biennial budget, which got done on time, despite the fact that Democrat Governor Tony Evers and the Republican legislature had a lot of different points of view. With the budget in place, what's on the docket for the fall session? Our guest legislators will talk about what they expect and how it will affect those of us living here in western Wisconsin. It's a legislative update here on the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Good to have you with us on the West Side, and we're honored to be joined by two legislators who represent western Wisconsin. Romaine Quinn is a Republican from Cameron who represents the 75th Assembly District, which includes all of Barron County and southern Washburn County, as well as small portions of Burnett, Polk, St. Croix, and Dunn counties. He's in his third term in office. Representative Quinn, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Jody Emerson is a first-term Democrat representing the 91st Assembly District, which includes most of the city of Eau Claire. Representative Emerson, good to have you with us.
It's my pleasure, Dean. Thanks for having me.
We will look forward to a lively conversation, but we count on you to be a part of it as well. What laws should our lawmakers be passing to make life better here in western Wisconsin? Are you expecting our divided government to get anything done at all? Call with your thoughts and your questions and ideas at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. So before we dive into the fall season preview, I'd like you both to look back at the floor period that ran from January to June. Representative Emerson, it was your first experience as a legislator. What stood out to you?
I guess I would have to say, the lack of session dates. I was expecting us to be in session a lot more than we were. It was, I guess the phrase slow walking is kind of what comes up when I think of what we've been doing with the state legislature right now. People put us in Madison to work on their behalf, and we can't work on their behalf unless we've got legislation days to do this with. So that was the biggest thing that stood out to me. So
Representative Quinn, you're in your third term now, even though at 29 you're still one of the youngest members of the legislature. And while Republicans have always had a majority in the legislature during your time there, this year is the first time you're working with a Democratic governor. How did that impact your experience in the spring session?
Well, and I think to Representative Emerson's point, for a lot of us, it's a learning curve, and many of the legislators got elected in 2010 or post-2010, so they've never known working in their capacity without a Republican governor. So I don't think it, slowing down right away, and getting grips of the new political reality and just, learning how do we do things from now. Maybe we negotiate a little bit different. It's we don't move as quick on stuff because we have to take into account that the governor's got some differing views. We're all kind of learning. This is our first budget process again with divided government for probably almost two-thirds of our caucus as well. So slow is not always bad, and we shouldn't pass bills just to pass bills, but we're sitting down, we're working on all sorts of issues. As you know, there's numerous speaker task forces on important issues that both left and right people care about, so I think we're going to have a productive fall session as well, and as we always have.
With that in mind, I'd like to ask both of you to reflect on the last session and the biennial budget that came out of it. Representative Quinn, what was the best thing that came through the budget in your opinion?
There was an enormous amount of good that happened in this budget. When you talk about long-term care, family care, more money for our personal care workers, our nursing homes, that's really important for my rural area in the district where we don't have a lot of resources and more people are probably on Medicaid or Medicare for funding for nursing homes. Schools as well, there's a significant bump again for every child in every school in every part of the state. So, and broadband, which I know we're going to talk about on the show as well. So there was, again, an enormous amount of good that could be accomplished while still living within our means and setting ourselves up still on a strong fiscal path moving forward as well.
Same question for you, Representative Emerson. What victories did your constituents get from the budget signed by the governor this summer?
I think the biggest win was the fact that it is a shared government now, and that we do have to negotiate. I don't think anybody who works in the Capitol was 100% happy with the budget that came out, and I think that's important. If if everybody's a little uncomfortable or unhappy with it, you know, maybe we hit a little bit more of the middle ground. So the fact that we were able to get some talking points out there, you know, we certainly didn't get some massive things that we wanted, like Medicaid expansion or other programs. But I know that my Republican colleagues didn't get everything they wanted either. And so, you know, maybe we are more on the right path of working together. So.
Well, let's flip the coin then. What work was left undone through the budget process, in your opinion? We'll start with you this time, Representative Emerson.
You know, I think the biggest disappointment with the budget process was the fact that we didn't fully embrace the Affordable Care Act and expand Medicaid to those people who are making between 100 and 138% of the federal poverty level. And we're talking about, for that, we're talking about a family of four, one person who is working full-time in an entry-level CNA job, and another person who is working about 35 hours a week of minimum wage. So that's the family of four that would have been able to qualify for Medicaid expansion under Governor Evers' proposed budget. We did not do it. And so I know, I'm sure that my colleague is going to bring up, you know, we didn't want to expand welfare. Well, we're talking about people who are working. So it's between 100 and 138% of the federal poverty level. And it's about getting those people access to affordable health care. And I think that was a great disappointment because it would have brought in enormous resources from the federal government. This is money that we have already given to D.C., and we're asking for a portion of it back. It'd be like a school board saying, you know what, we don't want any money from Madison for our school district. We want to just take care of it ourselves. A school board would never do it, but yet that's what we're doing with turning down this federal money for expanding Medicaid.
Well, Representative Quinn, one of the reasons Joint Finance gave, if I'm recalling correctly, for removing Medicaid expansion from the budget, is that this is something we should be talking about as a standalone sort of thing. Do you expect Medicaid expansion to come up this fall?
I do not. And unless, of course, the minority party brings that back up, it was pretty clear that there is not near a majority of our members that are ready to support that. And for a number of reasons, I think we could spend an entire show just on Medicaid expansion. But again, we have to remember, too, that the people we're talking about expanding access to, half of them already have insurance through the private exchanges, through Obamacare. And the other half that would propose to be covered under Medicaid already qualify for those subsidies on the private Obamacare exchanges and just don't take the insurance. So, again, numerous reasons why we didn't take the expansion. And in terms of, you know, other things in the budget we might not have liked, you know, it was hard to get both caucuses to spend as much as the budget actually did. So as you know, we spend billions more over last budget. And so it was even a tough sale to go as high as we did, although we all care about the areas that we invested in. So again, I think it was a good compromise. I think the Wisconsin budget, we call it, you know, Governor Evers said it was the people's budget. And we call it the Wisconsin budget, whatever name you want to call it. But at the end of the day, it made investments in areas that we all care about. And I just find it unfortunate that it was along a party line vote, because I think there was stuff in there for everybody.
What was disappointing to you regarding the budget that was signed? What was missing, that something that either just didn't make it to the bill or something that the governor vetoed?
Oh, well, for instance, specifically, there was $15 million set aside to expand emergency detention beds for people in mental health crisis, in a state of crisis. And that veto, that money, would have expanded access right here in Eau Claire and in Chippewa Falls, and it would have serviced the need for 28 Northwest regional counties, and it would have saved our taxpayers millions just on the county level from just transporting people who are in crisis. Instead of going to Winnebago and Madison, they could have came to Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls. So that was really disappointing. But again, the work doesn't stop. You know, we're going to bring the bill back, or we're going to talk about a veto override as well. So again, there's give and take on both sides, as Representative Emerson said, and I think there was some vetoes that we'll try to readdress as well.
And there are a couple of bills in the works relating to that mental health facility. We'll get to those a little later in the show. I've got it queued up to talk about. But I'm wondering, as we look ahead to the coming session, That can certainly be one of the aspects. But what do you think are the big issues that the legislature needs to tackle in the coming weeks during the fall floor session? Representative Quinn, let's start with you this time.
Well, we're excited to hear recommendations that come out from the various task forces that are going across the state. I know my colleagues have been working very hard. They've traveled all over the place for the water quality task force, for instance. So, you know, my district is pretty blessed. We've got good topography where we've got almost no contamination of private wells. If you look on that map, there's very few dots in Barron and Washburn County. But I know there's other places that really struggle. So having that in-depth, complex conversation with all stakeholders in every part of the region to try and identify solutions that aren't just simple and blanket statewide is important, too. And I know there's the task force on adoption as well. And I know a number of my colleagues and myself have been working on housing shortages. That's a big deal for many people in every part of the state, whether you're Eau Claire, Superior, La Crosse. It's tough to find affordable housing for those or what you'd consider workforce housing. So yeah, there's a lot of those issues that I think we can all come together and address on, and I look forward to that.
Rich Kramer from our news department had a piece on a couple of weeks ago about the housing shortage in Barron.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Representative Emerson, what issues does your party plan to raise in the coming weeks?
No, I think I have to agree with Representative Quinn that, you know, we're looking forward to hearing what the task forces have done this summer. Again, the water quality task force is a huge issue. All parts of the state are affected by that, rural and urban. So we really need to tackle that because, you know, having healthy drinkable water is a fundamental issue to being able to live, really. You know, I think we've got to tackle gun issues. You know, just even today, there's a threat against one of our high schools in Eau Claire. And so I don't know a whole lot of details about it yet, but we obviously have a problem surrounding that. And how do we protect everybody while protecting people's rights at the same time? That's going to be a huge discussion. And going back to your previous question, Dean, I would say one of the things that I was most disappointed that got cut out of the budget was the ability for local governments to get an additional bump in their shared levy, or the levy limits. That was one thing that was cut out of the budget. They could have had an additional 2%, if I'm remembering my figures correctly. So that was a disappointment because I know all local government entities are saying we are just so strapped right now and we don't have the ability to expand our what we're bringing in for our area, even if our people want it. So
it's our legislative update on the West Side. Our guests are State Representatives Jody Emerson of Eau Claire, the voice you just heard, and Romaine Quinn of Cameron. You are invited to call with your questions, comments, or opinions on upcoming legislation or other issues affecting Western Wisconsin. Join the conversation at 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is the West Side on the Ideas Network. This week we're talking, we've got our legislative update, we've got State Representatives Romaine Quinn and Jody Emerson with us, and again, we invite you to call 800-228-5615 to join the conversation. That's exactly what Dan from Birchwood did. Dan, you're on the air. Go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
As Representative Quinn no doubt knows, I'm very concerned about climate change, but putting that aside, there's a whole lot of benefits to locally produced renewable clean energy. So wanted to thank him for his interest in that and attending a briefing put on by the organization that I volunteer with and the Citizens Climate Lobby and the Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum. So I guess a couple questions. What's the latest on legislation to promote renewable energy in the state that keeps our energy dollars here in the state instead of sending them to Texas and North Dakota to buy coal and oil? And I'm also kind of particularly interested in, there was a bill earlier this session to promote electric vehicle charging corridors. And then I also have a recent interest in electric buses, school buses in particular, as a way to save taxpayer money. Number one, they're really very easy to convert. They're just a box with lots of room for batteries underneath. There's way less maintenance on them. There's no exhaust, belts, pistons, transmissions, et cetera. So there's huge maintenance savings for them. They're also super low fuel costs. They take two trips a day, and the rest of the time they can be charging either during the day with solar power or overnight on off-peak rates. But perhaps the biggest reason that I really am interested in electric school buses is that our kids right now are spending hundreds of thousands of hours on buses, breathing stinky exhaust fumes, which damage their developing lungs and brains, and that just seems awful to me. So if we could get our buses electrified, there's a number of huge benefits from our health of our kids to saving taxpayer money on maintenance and fuel for our buses. So,
Dan, thank you for that call. Romaine Quinn, one of your constituents, talking about renewable energy and initiatives in the legislature as it relates to that. Are you aware of any bills or any plans for that sort of legislation regarding electric vehicle charging, including electric buses?
Yeah, no, thanks for the call, Dan. And Dan's family is kind of an innovator up at their Fred Thomas Resort in Washburn County, north of Birchwood, that they get a large percentage of their electricity needs supplied through a solar project that they've developed. And I think they're a perfect example. He's exactly right, is that to sell renewable energy to both sides of the aisle in the future, I think the economics is the big thing. So right now, compared to 10 years ago, solar and a lot of the other technologies, it is more economically feasible and cheaper to develop renewable energies than it is for a lot of traditional sources. And so the market has done a marvelous job. And I think as Republicans, we've kind of inherently stood in the way of renewables, some for various reasons. But from a market approach, this is totally sellable for both sides of the aisle. And that's why I'm a big supporter of the Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum. It's a separate group that goes around and tries to educate people on renewable energies and how the market has made them economical enough for not only private individuals, but businesses as well. So in terms of specific legislation, I'm not aware of any floating around right now. I know we've talked about, you know, workforce training. You know, workforce training could also mean training people to be solar installers, you know, things like that. So I don't think renewable energies is out of the scope of some of the programs that we already have existing. And I know there was talk about, you know, monies from the Volkswagen lawsuit to go towards electric charging stations to make like a corridor up to northern Wisconsin. I still think that's a good idea. I think at some point the market will get there, and as more people have demand for charging stations, and we were going to use some of that money. And I can't recall correctly, it got spent somewhere else in the budget, whether I think the Republican caucuses ended up earmarking it for school buses, and I think it went towards somewhere else now. So I'll have to go back and look at that. But yeah, I'm certainly not opposed to, I'm an all-energy type of person, because I still think there'll be a role for traditional fossil fuels at some point for consistency. But I think Wisconsin's come a long way, and our providers are doing a phenomenal job now as well.
So, Representative Emerson, as far as renewable energy and what can be done in the legislature, do you have your eyes on any particular areas?
You know, I a lot of what my colleague said, I have to agree with. You know, as we've, you know, gone forward and as technology has changed, it's more affordable, it's more accessible. You know, I'd also add the fact that, you know, this investing in renewable energy creates jobs here that can't be outsourced. You know, we need the technicians to maintain the wind farms, to maintain the solar, to install the solar. Those jobs will never get outsourced because those products need to be here close to where they're being used. So this is a win-win situation. It's good for the earth. It's good for climate change. And it's also good for our local economies, especially maybe more rural areas that we can put wind farms in, that we can put solar areas in. You know, maybe this is how we can help inspire growth again in more rural areas, because, you know, we definitely need it as we're seeing the farming industry go through the changes it's going through. So,
Representative Quinn, you wanted to...
Yeah, one more follow-up. I had forgot to mention, I'm glad Representative Emerson brought up wind farms. So not all renewable energy is created equal, and not all of it is as accepted by locals as others. So right now there is a proposed project to go in the corner of my district, the town of Forest, and the township and the local residents have fought it vigorously because you're talking about windmills that are no longer 300 feet high. They're 600 feet high. I think it's still out there in terms of what potential health effects there are if you live real close, in terms of, you know, light flicker and things like that. So I'll be introducing legislation not to slow down the production or development of wind farms, but to allow locals more input. Because right now, if you have a development that's over 100 megawatts, it goes to the Public Service Commission, and the local units of government don't have a final say in that. And when you talk about putting windmills with setbacks, marking it to a person's house and not their lot line, what we're finding is that you actually kind of inadvertently take private property because I can no longer build on certain parts of my land if your windmill is on your side and could potentially be too close to my lot line. So there's a number of issues that I think we need to work out, but again, not in opposition to renewable energy, but to make sure that we take into account all the specific situations that occur as we continue to take advantage of some of that.
Representative Emerson, we do have a question as long as we're on the topic. Go ahead.
Can I just comment on what Representative Quinn said? You know, it's interesting that you're looking at that local control for a windmill farm that's going to be in your area when your party has consistently done the exact opposite when it comes to frac sand.
That's just not true.
You know, time and time again, people have wanted to put local constraints on when a sand mine can be in an area. And put local controls on what hours it's working and things like that. And the Republican Party over the last few years has taken local control away. So I find it intriguing, and I'm looking forward to looking into that bill. So thanks, Romaine. What are you saying, Dean?
If we look, I remember my first session when former Representative Barca was minority leader, and he would get on the floor and, you know, and hammer us on local control. And then when you look back at the 138 instances he mentioned, you know, about 90% were supported by both sides of the aisle. So, again, everyone, I think, supports local control, except when they run into something that they don't like. So, but specifically to frac sand mines, you know, I would invite Representative Emerson to come up to Barron County because we've done a phenomenal job. Barron County has kind of let each township determine what they kind of want in their town, and there are restrictions on hours of operation and things like that, or even where they can mine or how often they can mine. So specifically to frac sand mining, there's definitely a amount of local control, and that I have fought for as well. I know there's been other senators that have wanted to strip that from local units of government, but that we've opposed over the last couple of sessions as well.
800-228-5615 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. Liz from Eau Claire has joined the conversation. And Liz, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you. Well, I was a little disappointed not to hear that there's a task force on gun safety. National and state polls show that the public is interested in red flag laws and background checks at a minimum. Yesterday, I heard the story from my 11-year-old grandson who had the intruder drill at his middle school during the first week. And he told me with great bravado how he and his classmates would take out any intruder if it got past all those locked doors. So come on, Representative Quinn, the public is for this. Why are the Republicans not stepping up to the plate and doing what the public wants?
Well, in terms specifically of, I think she's referencing ALICE training that her grandson went through, and that is studies show that most institutions, including schools, should go through that. I know our sheriff in Barron County has done an enormous job of going through that workplace situation. You know, God forbid if it ever got to that point where someone is trying to do that and get into your school or business or church and cause harm. But that is a common training that, unfortunately, we're in a world where we can't take anything for granted at this point. So, again, it depends on the issue, right? You know, red flag laws, what exactly does that mean? You know, we're talking, even the ACLU, who's necessarily not a friend of conservatives in particular, or necessarily even the left as well, you know, has had concerns with red flag law legislation in Rhode Island or others. So I would have to actually see something first because, again, we're talking about people not have committed a crime or have a history of crime. You're talking about people who potentially may, you think, possibly do something wrong and restricting their ownership. And currently, it's my understanding, Wisconsin has that for domestic abuse situations as well. In terms of, you know, background checks, I think this has been argued for a lot of years. I know there's 12 states right now that have universal background checks. I'm not aware of any measurable difference in terms of gun violence in those states since they've passed actual universal background checks. And we've seen time and time again, whether it's you talk about these mass shootings or actually more people that are being killed in inner cities that we just conveniently don't talk about, is these people obtain firearms illegally already. It's already against the law, whether it's straw purchases, which we've also cracked down on as well, or either two sessions ago or last sessions ago, or they actually pass the background check. So what I don't want us to do is simply jump on a proposal like universal background check and then just lull the public into thinking they're safe, because when we know background checks, they fail. And for instance, right now, Wisconsin, we have our handgun hotline where we actually check more databases than the NICS system. So right now, our attorney general could hand that information over to the federal government and enhance our background checks, but we're not doing that yet. So there's a number of things I think we can do that we actually agree on. You know, mental health is one too, but it's a tough topic, and there's more to it than just the simple talking points that we all kind of fall on.
Well, legislative Republicans have consistently talked about mental health safety grants as being an answer rather than gun control. Representative Emerson, what are you hoping for on this topic?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's without a doubt we need to make sure we're instating universal background checks. We need to get these red flag laws in place. And, when you're talking red flag laws, there's a wide variety of what it could be. Ideally, what I would love to see, and I think, you know, what the Attorney General is talking about from what I've talked to him, is that, you know, somebody highlights a situation, you know, whether it's a family member, coworker, or, you know, might be police that bring it to it. You go before a judge, you have a hearing, you determine whether this person should have access to weapons or not. So you have the due process there. It's not just somebody swooping in and removing weapons. And then, you know, weapons may or may not be removed based on threats to themselves or others. And so, you know, these are common sense legislation. Putting some things like red flag laws, universal background checks, 48-hour waiting period, you know, is it going to stop every situation from happening? Absolutely not. But could it stop some situations from happening? Yes. And if we can prevent some tragedies, then that's what we need to do. And this is what we do all the time as we look at legislation. You know, as I'm sitting on the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee here at meetings, you know, we have OWI laws that are coming through. Well, we know that people are still going to drive intoxicated and impaired, but this may stop some people from doing it. And so that's the goal. We know that no law is fail-safe, and that no law is going to eliminate all issues. However, if we can eliminate some, then it's a win. And the what is happening right now with fear of gun violence, you know, if I go to church, is something going to happen? If I go to a concert, if I go to Walmart, if I go here and there, I mean, you never know. And I worry about this long-term repeated trauma that is happening to kids with these intruder alert drills. Romaine Quinn is exactly right. We need to all the time be practicing these things. Just like we need to practice fire drills and we need to practice tornado drills. However, when you do a tornado drill in school and you walk outside and you look back at the building and you don't see any smoke coming, you know it's a drill. You don't know with these intruder alerts whether it's a drill or not until, you know, later into the situation. And so I worry about the stress and the anxiety that this is putting on our children as they are prepping for the world that they live in now.
We continue to hear about the need for the state to do more to deal with mental health needs in our communities. Two senators from our region put forth bills last month to deal with that issue. Republican Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls introduced a bill to create a Northern Wisconsin Regional Crisis Center that would serve 29 counties in northern and western Wisconsin. Democrat Patty Schachner of Somerset has authored a separate bill that would instead call on the creation of regional crisis stabilization facilities in five regions across the state. Representative Emerson, the facility described in Senator Bernier's bill was in the budget passed by the legislature, but the governor used his line item veto to shift the $15 million to the Mendota Juvenile Treatment Center in Madison. Don't we need a facility like this for mental health detentions in our region?
We absolutely do need facilities around the state that deal with this. My problem with the proposal that was in the budget that the governor vetoed is that it specifically narrowed down one health system for
HSHS, which runs St. Joseph's in Chippewa Falls, Sacred Heart in Eau Claire, among others.
Absolutely. Any other money that we have is put out there for a request for proposal, an RFP. You know, aside from when we're looking in the budget at, Univille Claire needs a new science building. I mean, there's obviously some very specific things, but when we're saying, hey, we need to do a new road here, you know, we open that up for a request or proposal, and then we get the opportunity to have all kinds of companies say, hey, I can do this for this amount, I can do it for this amount.
So Representative, Representative Emerson, would you then support Senator Bernier's bill if it was amended to put the facility out for bid?
You know, that would definitely be an idea. I would be more likely to support it if it was open. I do like Senator Schachter's bill where it's saying, you know what, yes, we need these facilities, but instead of, you know, still from Superior to Eau Claire, that's pretty much, that's a big haul. So maybe we can have another one that's closer to Superior. It's smaller, but it's closer to Superior. Doing those five centers around the state seems reasonable to me.
Representative Quinn, Senator Schachter's bill would use empty hospital beds for emergency mental health needs. Isn't that a more practical and cost-effective way to deal with the issue?
No, not at all. And frankly, if I'm being brutally honest, I think Senator Schachter's bill was just a political stunt to protect her and the governor for not supporting Senator Bernier's legislation. You know, and I asked her specifically, I said, when did you have your bill drafted? Was it post-budget veto when we started talking about how important that money was, and it got vetoed? And she said, oh, of course not. So I asked her numerous times when she drafted her bill, and I have yet to hear back. So she could clear that up for me.
If it has merit,
right,
who cares when it was drafted?
Right. But the point is that Senator Bernier's legislation does far more than Senator Schachter's. And it's unfortunate that, you know, if you don't support Senator Bernier's proposal, but you support it being funded in Madison, and I would think a representative who actually represents the area that the facility would be built in would be important. There's a number of issues specifically to this. For one, no one can just open up and do this, right? You have to have the mental health professional staff to actually operate this. And you could talk between $1 million just for a psychiatrist. St. Joseph's was the only one that stepped forward during these conversations. Mayo Health Clinic was approached. Marshfield Clinic was approached. And in terms of distance and time, you know, the police chief of the city of Superior wrote a letter supporting Senator Bernier's proposal. So I just think it's unfortunate that we have a proposal that was vetted. It's supported by DHS directors, police chiefs, and mental health professionals in almost all of those counties. And unfortunately, it got vetoed out. So I think it's worth bringing back. I think a facility in the Eau Claire region, Chippewa Falls region area, will and can service all the needs for those counties. And I think it's something that shouldn't be controversial, because how would five facilities that we don't know where they're going to be, $1 million apiece, so that does nothing for the infrastructure. We're talking about $600 to $1 million just to put the room in for those specific requirements, let alone the ongoing costs of staffing that or training those professionals. So I think we absolutely need to bring Senator Bernier's proposal back for our region.
Great conversation so far with State Representatives Romaine Quinn, Republican from Barron County, and Jody Emerson, Democrat from Eau Claire. Stay with us through the hour for our legislative update on the West Side. Still have time for your calls and ideas. 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is the West Side on the Ideas Network. By the way, later this week, you can join the WPR Politics podcast team for a live recording and conversation at 7:30 Thursday, September 12th at Harborview Events Center in Washburn. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, Capitol reporter Laurel White, and host John K. Wilson will talk 2019 political happenings, take your questions, and share their experiences covering state and local politics. Bit of a drive, but a nice one. To Washburn, admission is $10, includes a complimentary beer. Space is limited. Ticket holders must be, of course, at least 21 years of age. That's in Washburn Thursday night, and you can go to WPR's website to learn more. We're back with our legislative update, and we're joined by Representative Romaine Quinn of Barron County, Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire. Let's shift topics a bit. Just last month, we did a show about the need for improved high-speed internet across access to rural areas here in western Wisconsin. Last week, Governor Evers was in our part of the state, in Spooner, in fact, to announce the first round of broadband grants appropriated in the state budget. Representative Quinn, this has been a big issue for you since you were elected. Are you satisfied with the progress the state is making now in broadband support?
One, on that commercial break, that's a great idea, offering a free beer to get people to show up. So I'll have to remember that maybe for listening sessions in the future. Yes, we've come a long way. And as you've mentioned, this has kind of been an issue that's been near and dear to us since taking office. So from, you know, Governor Walker starting the broadband grant program, and then for us to piggyback off that through legislation to encourage telecommuters, how can we get them access and live in rural areas full time, where you can operate your business or your job online, getting communities ready, broadband forward, and then the previous budget putting about $35.5 million into broadband-related activities. And now this budget, it'll be $48 million over the biennium, which is a huge increase as well. So again, continuing to piggyback off the efforts, I think to this day we've connected over 75,000 homes, thousands of businesses, in areas where it's just not economical for that cooperative or private entity to make that last mile. So how can we partner with them and continue that? So I look forward to the grant recipients receiving their newest awards and continuing that build-out process to all parts of the state.
Now, Representative Emerson, your district has about the best broadband reach in western Wisconsin as you look at the maps that show that. Do you see any benefit to your constituents with these broadband expansions?
To my constituents, absolutely, because, if nothing else, it's going to help with business. As we look at Eau Claire being a medical center, we look at expanding, telemedicine. We need to have the infrastructure there in order to do it. So it's very possible it's going to create jobs and expanding businesses right here in Eau Claire that can then roll out to the other areas, via broadband. But as far as, how it's going to impact people's houses, probably not, because like you said, we've got pretty good connectivity. But however, we need to always look at what is good for our region. What's good for our region is good for Eau Claire, which is good for the state. And so, I absolutely support expanding broadband. I don't know a whole lot about the very details of how we do that, just because that doesn't impact my area. But it is one of those things I'm looking forward to learning a lot more about.
Yep. And actually, and broadband, I think, is an area of bipartisan support. And we just had a hearing on another one of my bills that would continue in our effort, put one more arrow in the quiver for these providers, is that in the past, these telephone companies were that telephone companies. But now these cooperatives, they provide that service. Well, unfortunately, they still have to pay a tax on the infrastructure that other providers don't, such as charters. So we have legislation that would phase out that tax over time on these providers, specifically for rural infrastructure in rural areas. So we had a hearing on that bill last week, and hopefully we can get some bipartisan support to, again, just free up that capital and allow those entities in the far-reaching corners of the state to continue to invest their own dollars right back into the ground to connect as many people as we can.
You've both mentioned, as we look ahead to the coming session, the work that's been done over the summer from three task forces that Assembly Speaker Voss put together to work on particular issues, those issues being water quality, adoption, and suicide prevention. They've been holding hearings throughout the state, including some in western Wisconsin. The Water Quality Task Force just met in Menominee last week. Representative Quinn, what legislation do you expect to bubble up from these task forces?
Well, hopefully some really good proposals, right? So none of us, and as legislators, we're expected to know a little about a lot. And so none of us, depending on our background, knows everything. So that's why we look forward to these recommendations, because they really do get into the nuts and bolts of all these issues. And I did want to qualify my comments. I didn't try to say that Barron County has, no water issues. Surface water is a big issue, especially on our Chetek chain of lakes. But for the most part, we've got good groundwater. So again, all those issues are different in every part of the state. I do look forward to more recommendations in terms of adoption. I've got a very close cousin of mine. Her and her husband were both adopted, and they met and they're married, and I think they hope to adopt someday. And they said the process is 2 years and it's super expensive. And it's like, gosh, whether you're pro-life, pro-choice, or what have you, why would we want to make it more burdensome for loving families to bring in more children? And that could be, foster care too as well. So I think there's a number of recommendations that I think will find bipartisan support for this fall session on all those issues.
Representative Emerson, Democrats have criticized the Republican legislature in recent years for limiting public hearings to proposed legislation. Are these task forces showing that, giving you the openness that your party has been seeking on important issues?
I tell you, the water quality task force that was in Menominee last week started at 1 o'clock, and I think we got out of there about 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And a good portion of that was public input. You know, there's always invited testimony at these, and then it opens up for public input. And so having these various task forces traveling around the state, and whether it's the Joint Finance Committee, as we're looking at doing the budget earlier in the year, or it's these specific task forces, I think it's always good for people in our area, because we can't get to Madison for a hearing if we've got some input on a bill. You know, if people are working and going to school, things like that. But these traveling task forces really do help. And so I love to see it. I love to see all the civic engagement that was there. Some people for some of the proposals, some of them against it. And it was respectful. It was good. And I think this is what democracy is about. So the first time I've really seen it firsthand from a legislator doing that this summer. I love watching it. It's great. So.
Good. Representative Quinn, you've just put out a bill for co-sponsorship that would create a grant program to support pregnancy resource centers in Wisconsin. The proposal, though, would put the political organization Choose Life Wisconsin in charge of distributing those funds. Tell us more about your proposal and explain why you would use Choose Life Wisconsin to manage this proposed grant program rather than existing state agencies.
Yeah, so our proposal, a couple of years ago, I got introduced to the Pregnancy Help Center of Rice Lake, and we've gone to a number of their dinners as well to raise money. And just the emotional connection and just seeing what they do is just so phenomenal. And to know that there's, you know, over 60 other pregnancy help centers across the state as well that do phenomenal work, not just from, you know, counseling or being a place where young families or even older families with unplanned pregnancies can stop, but providing resources, you know, and extra goods from diapers and you name it to those who don't know if they're going to make it or to get by or how to manage that pregnancy. So what we said is, what the heck? Why are we not supporting institutions like this that also offer help to families besides an alternative that may just include having an abortion if it's an unwanted planned or if it's an unplanned pregnancy? So we decided to go that route, and we said, well, currently we have our pro-life plates, and so right now the money raised from those custom plates goes
license plates.
Yep, yeah. Sorry, I should have qualified that. And so that money is distributed by the organization to the entities that they've already identified as the Pregnancy Resource Help Centers. And so, and we said they already do this, and so why not manage it through them? And at the same time, you know, we would require them to come back and say, okay, which centers got the grant funding, you know, who applied, and then we can review that after each year and see where that's going as well.
Representative Emerson, it's a new proposal. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to read Representative Quinn's Pregnancy Resource Center bill. If you have, what do you think of it?
I haven't read.
Hello? Did we lose you? Hello?
Hello?
Can hear you now, yes.
Okay,
thank you.
Sorry about that. I haven't read the actual bill. I have heard about the bill, so I'm just going to talk a little bit higher level just because I don't know the nuts and bolts of the bill. So,
yeah.
But, you know, when I was pregnant with my first daughter, I actually went to Apple Crisis Pregnancy Center. And so, you know, it does have a special place in my heart for these facilities that are willing to reach out to people in a crisis situation. However, as state tax dollars, I think we need to make sure that we are putting them in places that have legitimate medical things that are doing and doing evidence-based counseling. You know, a lot of these crisis pregnancy centers are religiously based. They are not offering all options out there. You know, when you go to a Planned Parenthood, for example, and I'm sure that this is what Representative Quinn was thinking of, is this is the alternative to Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood would never say your only option here is an abortion. They would say your options are you can have this baby, you can give it up for adoption, or you can have an abortion. I don't, and those are the three options when a woman finds out that she's pregnant. I don't think that these crisis pregnancy centers are going to be giving all options. They're going to give their version of the options that they find are suitable for a woman. And that's just not right. We need to have evidence-based medical situations out, information out there. And so often, not around here as much, but in other parts of the state, these crisis pregnancy centers are actually marketing themselves as medical clinics. And that's not right. Oftentimes they're staffed by very caring volunteers, wonderful volunteers, but they're not nurses, they're not doctors. And to give the impression that you are a medical clinic is not right. And I would not support putting money into a situation that whose life is determining where the money goes.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any false narratives that are being put out, I guess, by these organizations. We'd have to look case by case to see if, you know, they're claiming something they're not to be, which I would assume would be illegal under state law. But we can look into that. And again, these clinics do STI testing. They do, ultrasounds. You know, mine actually went so far as that they operate a home now. So if you have no place to go, or maybe you're kicked out of your home by your parents because you were pregnant or who knows the case, but you're allowed to stay in this home and raise your child for up to 2 years, you know, if you have no place to go, or maybe you're in an abusive relationship. So again, we're fine giving millions and millions of dollars to an organization who, yes, is a proponent of abortion, you know, but we're not fine supporting a little bit amount to other organizations that offer care, support, and services that may not be funding or providing abortions as well. So I think there's definitely room for both sides on this.
With a few minutes left in the show, I want to take advantage of the fact that I have a couple of political folks here to pick your brains as politicians and political observers. Last week's Marquette poll showed President Trump's approval rating remaining below 50% in the state. Representative Quinn, as a Republican, does that low approval rating for the president concern you as a fellow Republican whose next election will happen the same day?
Nope.
Okay.
It doesn't, because, you know, he wasn't supposed to win last time. So, I take polls with a grain of salt. Not that they don't matter, don't play a role. But again, there's still a lot of people, even with the divisiveness, I think, drives people, one, to hate politics, but two, to a lot of times, if you're not naturally vocal, to keep it within yourselves. And I still think there is a silent majority out there, especially in my district, that will still support the president, even though they don't want to put signs out, they won't put the bumper sticker on, and they may even be afraid to talk with their family or friends for being insulted for that support.
Representative Emerson, can the Democrats come up with a presidential candidate who can take advantage of that low presidential approval rating in the state?
Oh, absolutely. We've got a number of wonderful candidates. The presidential race right now is kind of reflective of what happened last year with the governor's race. You know, we had an awful lot of candidates that were vying for the nomination with the main goal of being able to get Scott Walker out of office. The main goal with these presidential candidates on the Democratic side right now, the goal is to get President Trump out of office. And, you know, as we saw in November of last year, we were successful with that. And I'm sure we're going to be successful with this, too, because, you know, I mean, we're dealing with a president who is inviting the Taliban to have meetings around the same time as September 11th. Not only is he dangerous, but he's tone deaf as well. So,
Representative Quinn, I'm going to give you the last word. A member of Congress, Sean Duffy, announced he'll be leaving his seat in the House of Representatives later this month due to family issues. Almost all of your assembly district falls within that 7th congressional district. One of the names that has come up as a possible candidate for the 7th congressional district is Romaine Quinn. So, Representative Quinn, here's your chance to make some news today. Gonna run.
Yeah. Well, we've been still considering that with our family as well. Obviously, it's a really big deal, and there's a number of issues, specifically the dairy crisis, that is very near and dear to my heart, that definitely requires federal action that we can't fix at a state level. And I think we're running out of time for our dairy farmers. And so I want to see a candidate, whether it's myself or someone else, truly be a champion for that issue. So we'll see over the next coming weeks on what that looks like.
All right, had to try.
Yes, good try.
That was the voice of Romaine Quinn, State Representative Romaine Quinn from Barron County. We also had State Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire on the show. Thanks both of you for joining us today.
Thanks, Steve, for having us.
The producer for today's show was Clara Neipert. On-air producer was Catherine Thomas. Kate Spranger managed publicity for today's show. Next week, we preview Restaurant Week with a look at local food and cuisine and the changing trends affecting those of us who live and eat in western Wisconsin. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.